If you're listening to the show, you're probably enjoying a nice hot cup of coffee to start the morning. And good for you. As researchers have found, drinking plenty of coffee is an essential ingredient in living longer, perhaps. Joining us to discuss this and other stories coming out of the science world, which I guess is the world we all live in now, is Ben Lewis, from a producer from Australia's Science Channel. How's it going, Ben?
I am fantastic. Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be inside because it's so cold out there.
Yeah. And have you had your morning cuppa?
No, unfortunately, I had to skip it. So I had a slept in a little bit too late.
Oh, no.
And didn't have time for my morning cuppa on the way in. But yeah, normally I do like either a coffee or a tea. But yeah, normally like to start with a hot drink.
It is nice. And we always love to hear stories that encourage our bad behaviours. Now, is coffee the key to eternal life?
Probably not the key to eternal life, but certainly there has been some research that's come out just recently, and they looked at well over 500,000 people, so a huge number of people, and they looked at all their coffee drinking habits and then also their health over the course of about 16 years. And they found that, yeah, the people who drank coffee were living longer than those people who didn't drink coffee.
Wow.
Or drank less coffee. And this is, you know, if you drink one cup of coffee a day, you saw some benefit. If you drank two or three cups of coffee a day, you saw more. So, you're actually, if you drank a little bit more, you're getting more benefit from that. You're living a little bit longer. You're possibly living a little bit healthier as well.
Right. And does this include decaf?
It does, actually, which is a really surprising thing. That was one thing that no one sort of expected out of this. It was regular strength coffee. And also decaf. So it's probably not caffeine in the coffee, but we genuinely have no idea. And that's sort of one of the problems with this study, I guess, is that it doesn't actually explain why.
Mm.
What's actually causing this effect? So we, you know, it could actually be the coffee, but it doesn't rule out that it might be something else. Maybe there's something else amongst coffee drinkers. Maybe, you know, it's the fact that they are getting up and they're moving, they're walking 10 minutes to the coffee shop to get their coffee every day. Maybe it's that, or maybe it's something else. So there's a few sort of what we call confounding factors in there, you know, things that might be throwing a little bit of uncertainty into the actual causal link, you know, what's causing the effect. But certainly from these results, it does seem if you drink coffee and a little bit of coffee, a cup a day, you're going to be seeing some benefits. And that includes, you know, a reduced risk of death of heart disease, also stroke and cancer, and kidney disease as well. So, you know, they're sort of some of the big, you know, big health issues.
So it could potentially lengthen a person's lifespan, keeping in mind that correlation doesn't always equal causation, as they say.
Yeah.
But is there too much coffee?
There absolutely definitely is. Like this doesn't, you know, 100% does not apply to everyone. If you have any heart issues, for example, coffee is generally like bad news. It, you know, it accelerates your heart rate and gets the blood pumping more. And that's not necessarily a great thing if you do have heart disease or heart problems. So, you know, if your doctor's told you not to drink coffee, maybe stick away from it. And also if you're pregnant as well. So, you know, it's not like a one size fits all sort of finding. You know, not everyone's going to get this benefit. You know, there are some good reasons to be avoiding coffee as well.
Yeah, I'd love to know more about that one because longitudinal studies are fascinating. Do you know if they looked at many other facets of their lifestyles?
So this is part of a much, much bigger study where basically what they do is they recruit like hundreds of thousands of people. As I said, you know, one of the studies was well over 500,000 people. And every sort of couple of years, and I think in this case it was 5 years, they check in with this group of people and they ask them to fill out surveys about, you know, their lifestyle, health, diets, pretty much everything that they can sort of think of. They ask these people. And then every 5 years or every couple of years, they check in with them again. They get updates. So, yeah, you know, as it sort of goes along, you can start to see these trends coming out. So I'm not 100% sure of, you know, any other study, any other findings I found out of this particular group of people, but there certainly are some. There's a massive one, I think, over in the US called the Nurses Health Study, which has been going for years and years and years now, decades, where they're following a whole group of nurses and they're finding out all sorts of interesting things. And that was one of the really sort of, I think, big studies that sort of found a link between taking aspirin and that being good for your heart health as well. So there's a lot of these, as you call them, longitudinal studies as they're following people through time around the world. And they're finding out all really cool trends.
Yeah.
And such as coffee.
And they're hard to get investment in because people want, you know, quick findings, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. It's not a fast turnaround. You know, if you're sort of searching for trends over, you know, 10, 15 years, there's this saying in science, in research, publish or perish. And it sort of means like if you're a researcher, you need to be pretty much constantly churning out articles, like research articles, research papers to justify your job and justify your funding. So yeah, if you're working on like a longitudinal study and you're trying to like look over 20-year trends, you're kind of maybe a little bit of a disadvantage there. So yeah, they can be a little bit difficult to set up and also to get funding for.
Ben Lewis from Australia's Science Channel is with us. We're talking about the latest research in the science world. And scientists have come to a startling revelation, Ben, about the travel speed of the T-Rex. So they don't just have issues with short arms, but potentially small legs as well.
Yeah, everyone knows the scene from Jurassic Park, don't they? You know, it's dark and it's raining and they're sitting in the Jeep. And the water. Why do you even carry an open cup of water in a
so
Jeep?
So that you can have sense. This symbolic motif or something.
The water starts jiggling as this T-Rex starts approaching. And then, you know, I can't remember whether it's Jeff Goldblum or Sam Neill, but one of them claims that the T-Rex can run 60 kilometres an hour. And, you know, you need to go faster than that to be able to get away from them. This is genuinely an argument that's been going on for like 20 years, if not longer, probably 30 years, amongst paleontologists about just how fast can the T-Rex actually run. And there's a couple of new findings which suggest Jeff Goldblum and Sam Neill, as much as I love them, they were wrong in this case. It's
Are
not
you
60
telling me
hour.
that Jurassic Park was factually incorrect?
Who would have thought? God, you know, oh, my childhood ruined. No.
So how fast could they run?
Well, the new estimates, even now, they vary a little bit. So one paper worked it out mathematically, and they reckon it was around about 19 kilometres an hour. And that's because the T-Rex is, as we all know, so huge, it needs to come overcome its own weight. So, you know, to be able to run, you actually need to move your own weight. So, you know, because they're so heavy, that sort of slows them down. Another one looked at their bone strength. And this is actually really quite cool. So I looked at a couple of different techniques to look at the actual strength of the bones in the legs of the T-Rex. And they've found that anything faster than around about 20 kilometres an hour would have snapped the legs of the T-Rex. So as the T-Rex is running along, the weight of it and the forces going through the legs of the T-Rex would have actually just snapped its legs if it was actually moving any quicker. So what they suggest instead is that rather than running, it was kind of just walking quickly.
Power walking,
exactly.
Oh, that's
its
best
little
image.
Arms pumping along, hips waggling as it goes. But yeah, it was walking along. And there is actually like a big difference between that. I mean, if you're walking, there's always part of your body touching the ground at any time. But if you're running, you're sort of like jumping. There's moments where you're completely in the air. And they think it's as the, you know, T-Rex was running, if it was in the air, that force of landing back down, that's what would have snapped its legs. So if it was sort of always supporting its weight on the ground while it was walking, its legs probably would have been all right. But that would have limited its speed to about 20 kilometers an hour or so, maybe a little bit more, which is probably actually still quicker than you could move. So you're not completely out of the woods. It might not be, you know, 60 kilometres an hour, but if you're being chased by a T-Rex, you're really going to have to hustle to get away from it. Like, most people can sort of sprint anywhere from about 20 to 25 k's an hour. Like, Usain Bolt goes about 38 kilometres an hour, but he's, you know, a freak, as we all know.
So he'll be able to outrun a T-Rex?
Yeah, he's out of here. Like, you don't want to go to Jurassic Park with that Usain Bolt because you're in trouble, basically.
All right,
yeah.
I'll keep that in mind. Ben Lewis is with us. He's from Australia's Science Channel. And lastly, we've discussed on our program that humanity could be sleepwalking into World War III. Ooh, spooky stuff. Researchers have come up with a new last man standing, so to speak, amongst species when we inevitably bite the dust. And who are these little guys that are going to beat us?
Yeah, I don't know whether you've ever done it, but, you know, I've sort of sat at home and thought, what would it take to wipe out all life on Earth? And I just realized saying that out loud now how ominous that sounds. But it's a really interesting question. Like, what would it take to wipe out all life on Earth? You know, humans, we think we're pretty tough, but without technology, we're not really. We're actually pretty vulnerable. It doesn't really take much to sort of wipe us out. But there's a lot of species which are much, much more hardy than us. And if you haven't heard of them before, I'd like to introduce you to one called the tardigrade. Now, If you're on your phone or at home or near a computer, Google it because they're the funniest looking things in the world. They're only about a millimeter long, but they kind of look like a caterpillar wearing like a puffer jacket.
Yeah.
They're ridiculous looking things, but they literally are indestructible. Like they can go 30 years without food or water. You can dry them out completely and then, you know, give them some water and they'll just come back to life. They'll sort of like dehydrate themselves and then just rehydrate themselves. They can live at the bottom of the ocean. They can withstand high temperatures. They can withstand the vacuum of space.
Whoa.
Like genuinely, you can't kill them. But what would it take to kill them? So some scientists thought about this and they sort of threw a few options out there and thought, right, is there an asteroid that could wipe out all life on Earth? What would it take? It would take to boil all the oceans off the face of the Earth. An asteroid large enough to do that would have to be about the same size as Pluto. There's no asteroids that we know of the size of Pluto that are ever going to come near Earth. So that's off the table. A supernova would have to be so close to boil all the oceans off Earth that that's not going to happen either. There's no stars other than our own sun. There's no stars that are close enough to be able to boil the oceans off Earth. And a gamma ray burst, which is just like an absolute pounding of gamma radiation, also unbelievably unlikely to happen. So if the tardigrades are essentially indestructible and they can't be killed by anything the universe is ever going to throw at us, anything that affects the rest of the species on Earth, the tardigrade will be last man standing until the sun dies in about 10 billion years' time.
Wow.
So we've got a new champion. Forget the cockroaches. Again, the movies have been lying to you. Cockroaches won't be the last species on Earth. It will be the funniest looking species on Earth, which is the tardigrade.
I'm going to go look that up. Is that the one with the little, it looks like a bear with little claws?
Yeah, they are nicknamed the water bear and they kind of look like a little bear. They're just crazy looking little things, but they live in water, but they live everywhere. Top of mountains, bottom of oceans, everywhere you'll find them. And as I said, absolutely indestructible. Like, check them out. They're amazing little guys.
Good for them. Hey, it was wonderful to have you with us, Ben. Thanks so much for sharing all of that science news with us.
It's been fun as always.
Yeah. Ben Lewis, he's a producer from the Royal Institution of Australia who hosts Australia's Science Channel. For those stories and more, just type australiasscience.tv into your web browser.